Okay, then all right. Then you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio, and we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And I'm Melody, and my co-host this evening is Dr. Eric Carlstrom, who's a professor of geography at California State University Stanislaus with nearly 30 years of teaching experience, and his academic research has focused on using soils and landforms as a means of reconstructing climates and environmental conditions of the past. And our guest this evening is Ralph Kermit Winterud II, and he was raised on a farm in southeastern Kansas and belonged to the IBEW Union, Denver and Alaska, Utility Workers of the American Union, Wyoming, and Teamsters Union, Alaska, with classifications as substation electrician, power plant electrician, and communications tech. Winterud has worked on the Alaska pipeline as a lead communication tech from Prudhoe Bay to the Valdez Terminal, and started his own telephone interconnect in 1985 and became the largest privately held company in his field in Alaska, grossing over $2 million per year and growing. But now he is a host on Republic Broadcasting Network and hosts his own program. And Ralph, are you there, and do you have anything to add to your background there?
Well, you just left off one thing. I was taking the money out of my company, and I ran for governor, and I was funding all like Joyce Riley and, the Gulf War Syndrome, and I was really active. And, boy, I tell you, when you stir the pot, all of a sudden you make enemies in all kinds of high places. So within 3 years, I didn't have a company.
Oh, dear. So.
Oh, well.
So how long have you been a host on Republic Broadcasting?
You know, I don't know. Probably a year, maybe something like that. Maybe close to two now.
Two? Okay.
I'm not sure, you know. I tell you what, when you get up to 67, the years go by almost like weeks.
Yeah, but
and
you're...
Let me tell you, this is not a good thing. Oh, to be 21 again.
Well, where is it you like to really focus on, Ralph?
Well, what I have ended up, I don't know. Do you know who Dan Metter was?
No, I don't.
Okay, he was a great researcher. He's now passed on. And I got into trying to figure out how they got our republic away from us. And when I was in the telecommunications, when I finally hit the big time, because it takes 5 years experience, it's just a lot of work to get in to be able to hit the biggest jobs. And I got into telecommunication, and it is rottenly corrupt from top to bottom. And I lost a bid where they added $7 million to a sealed bid, and that I said, I have no idea. And the Supreme Court of Alaska said, well, we don't really see a problem. I said, holy Geronimo. So I started from that, trying to figure out what happened to our republic, and I met with all sorts of senators and representatives and, oh, thanks for coming in, Ralph, and yada, yada, yada. Finally, you know, you exhaust all this stuff, and you finally start to wise up. This thing is rotten from top to bottom. We have despots everywhere. And so with Dan Metter, he was working IRS stuff, and I did some of the research for him behind the scenes there, law, because he was a great writer and great researcher, had a great mind. And so anyway, I eventually got into trying to figure out, I got out of all the groups, patriot groups, all of them, been set up, you know, they get infiltrated. And I started off with, let's start from a logical situation. I don't know anything about anything. What are agencies and what are regulations? I hear it every day. Law enforcement agency, child enforcement agency, everything's Nate. What are these things? And that's basically, I applied that towards the Internal Revenue Service. And that's when I just recently finally got to what I consider the abyss, the bottom of the abyss of hell of where these things live. And boy, it's taken a long time to get there. And when you see it, I've talked to the head of attorney for the Federal Register. I've talked to a chief counsel from the IRS. I sent you some clips on a company that has to remain anonymous, but from a somebody that I know that talked to one of these financial outfits, call up. We'll help you with your IRS problems. And the bottom line, this affects everything going on in America. We have a fourth branch of government. It's called the Headless Fourth Branch, right out of FDR's. He wanted to have this researched out, and I have a 400-page book that I, that's one of only two books that I put out for a $100 donation, but Headless Fourth Branch, and he tells how this thing works and where these things live. These agencies live in the Federal Register. That's the only way you can beat them. That's where these things live. Congress passes what we think are laws of the United States. They publish their stuff in the statutes of large books. Well, where do agencies publish what they do for regulation, and do all regulations have application to you and me? They publish their stuff in the Federal Register. They're mandated under the Federal Register Act of 1935. They're mandated under the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946. Then the question becomes, okay, now I know where they must publish. In the Federal Register, and the abstract, the summary of it, is in the Code of Federal Regulations. Okay, so now I know where to go read where agencies live. The only other question is, are all regulations, do they have the, what's called a force and effect of law, the same as the statute of the United States? And the answer is no. IRS doesn't do them. Healthcare can't do it because it's a benefit. That's why you go read the Healthcare Act, and it's over 200 times you will see that regulations are going to be promulgated. Really? Why doesn't Congress do all this? Because they can't. Under the Administrative Procedures Act of 1946, right in the Congressional Record, it says the stuff that agencies do, when Congress passes a law, it does not touch the individual citizen until regulations are promulgated. And there's only one type we've got to look for. It's called subsidy or substantive regulations. And there is a process in 5 U.S.C. 553 B, C, and D. It's equivalent to what we think of Congress passing a bill. They have to vote on it and get it by a majority, get the El Presidente to sign it, or it comes back and they override the veto. This exact same process for the world, this fourth branch of government, is in 5 U.S.C. 553 B, C, and D. They must give us notice. They must tell us they're going to comply. It's a subsidy rule. They have to wait 30 days. They have to allow us to comment on it. Then and it's published in a proposed rule. Then they have to come back, and after the 30 days minimum, they have to address all of the comments. Then they publish a final rule, and they have to wait 30 more days before it becomes effective so that we can either take them to court or we can write them and say, hey, you guys are wrong. And in this fourth branch, this is conclusive. I'm not talking about something that might be out there. It's there. There is no one overseeing the agencies. They're all self-policing. They live in utopia. Well, what do you think happens when you lose all accountability in what we call government? That's the only thing that makes a constitutional republic work, is accountability. They're not elected to office. They hold no office. They have no power. They're all flunkies. We can't fire them. We can't hire them.
Okay, Dr. Carlstrom?
I'm still trying to get a fix on what the fourth branch of government is. Could you re-explain that again, Ralph?
Sure.
What is the fourth branch of government?
The fourth branch of government is agencies. They started after the Civil War. The Interstate Commerce Commission is the first one, and what they were is they have several different names of the agencies. They call them independent establishments, and they were to be set aside in a government so that they would not be politically accountable to anyone. Because prior to, after, during the Civil War and after, any time the president got reelected, there's all kinds of people would lose their jobs, maybe several thousand of them. Because the president would end people that were of like mind to him. Or that, I guess you might say, politically owing him. Well, they wanted to stop that. That was the thing they were supposedly, so they're going to establish these things called agencies. They're technically outside the Constitutional Republic. There is no authority for them to exist. And the Interstate Commerce Commission was the first one, and then during World War I, they started gaining, and then when FDR got in, they just took over. And right in his book, he says they are small, independent governments.
Can you give some more examples other than the Interstate Commerce Commission?
Health and Human Services folks. The Federal Reserve is an independent establishment of which they are, and I have a recording right out of the head of the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is accountable to nobody, period. Not the president, not Congress, until Congress changes it. FEMA is another independent establishment that was established under Carter. And once that thing is out there, it's not accountable to anybody. Now, how they work this thing, they pass regulations, just like in the healthcare they're trying to get through.
Could we get some more examples here, Ralph? Would it be also the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission? FERC?
Yep, all those, the Atomic Energy Commission, FEMA, Homeland Security, even the Department of Justice. They're all
the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Food and Drug Administration.
Yep.
Okay, so we start to see that these things do have an enormous role in our lives. I'm just trying to think of some more. The EPA is a big one. Can you think of some more?
I don't know, but I have a book of listing of them, and there are literally hundreds of them. Some are more, but we have a whole government of agencies.
So those live outside of the jurisdiction of our Congress, then?
What they do, here's how the regulations work. Congress says, just like if you're health care, you can't pass subsidy regulations because there's in 553 A2, if it's a benefit, if it's interpretive reg, which is some attorney's opinion, if it's agency's procedure, all of those have no force and effect of law. They're just some attorney's opinion. So Congress passes what's called a legislative grant to these agencies to pass subsidy regulations. And in the IRS, it's regulations promulgated by the secretary. Those are the magic words. When they pass a regulation, these regulations then come back to Congress. They sit there for 60 days. And if there is no opposition, after 60 days, they are written in concrete, almost without exception. They can't be touched. This is why during Katrina, the hurricane, you saw all of this nonsense going on in Congress, hoo-ha, hoo-has. They don't have any control over this agency. The only two things that they can do, they can cut off funding, or what you see all the time on the TV is they're going to hold hearings. Hey, you, these are mercenaries. Hired mercenaries is what they are, if you look at it from that perspective. They're no different than Blackwater. So they hold hearings, and we're sitting on the sidelines, and they're beating up the guy, and we're going, oh, man, he's going to get him. He's going to get him. And nothing happens because they can't do anything. There's no accountability.
So if they had like a 9/11 commission again or something of that sort, you're saying that even if they held them accountable, there really isn't anything they could do? Is that what you're saying?
You would have to look and see how the 9/11 commission is set up. But all of these agencies that exist, once those regulations are promulgated, Congress can't do anything unless they go back in and issue another directive and say, hey, look, we hired you mercenaries, and we're changing the way we're doing things, or we're just going to unfund you. That's the only control the president and Congress has. the president on most of these agency heads, he can't fire them. He has to have cause. He can't just up and say, hey, you're not doing it right. He can't fire them. That's explained in this book that I got, that FDR says how this whole, it's taken away the power from the president and it's taken away from Congress. So we have these hearings.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, I'm still trying to get a fix on which are agencies that you're talking about. Would the U.S. Forest Service be an example? Would the
all
Bureau
of them.
Reclamation?
Yes. Forest US Service,
National
yes.
Park Service?
Yes.
Okay. Department of Agriculture would be a department in the federal government. Would that be an agency you're talking
yep.
about?
They promulgate regulations, too, and then they're all interlocked. Most of them are interlocked.
Department of Interior.
Yes.
So in it, who's the one that
the IRS.
Yes.
Also? Okay.
So who designates these the positions? Who's the one that's giving the positions to these? Are these like cabinet-level positions on some of them? Or?
No, they're not. They're okay. not cabinet-level. What they do is they will some of these are what they will do is like the Commissioner of Internal Revenue Service. He'll be nominated by the president, and Congress will approve him, and then he's on his own.
So that's interesting that the Congress doesn't have any kind of control over him, but they can nominate him to the position.
The president nominates, and then Congress can do it, or they will allow these to it's an illusion.
Okay.
Because if they were true high-powered top, you know, the very, very top of these guys, the president can fire them. But only the top. But that's why when they went into the Department of Treasury and they're going out and they're saying, hey, where all the money go? You've seen that out? And they go down to the person that's in charge. Just, I don't have to tell you. Federal Reserve said, well, we're not going to tell you where all this money went. We don't have to do it. And they don't. It's an illusion.
Well, we know that the Pentagon lost about $2 or $3 trillion in the early part of this decade. Never explained where that went.
They don't have to. The military, the Veterans Administration, is another agency. That's a legitimate one. But that's why the veterans get screwed over, because Congress makes promises, but there's no force and effect because it's a benefit. When they get people to enter the military, oh, we're going to take care of you. Yeah, oh, the Department of Defense. Yeah, well, we're just anything that happens, don't worry about it. And then they get in there and they come back and this depleted uranium, which I'm going to have on my show next week. They're killing our troops. They're making them sick. They have deformed babies, all the stuff. And the first time they did this when they were doxycycline, when they were over there and they contaminated all these troops with all this biological stuff. And it's all proven. And their suits didn't work. And they come back and they say, oh, it's all psychological. And I had Ron at Topolsky, I think is his name, out of Arizona. I flew him up to Alaska. He sat and watched it. He was over that. And they blew all this up. And he got it. His wife got it. His kids got it. And his animals got it. His animals died. And they said, oh, it's all psychological. And there was one country that never had any problems with the Gulf War Syndrome. Would you like to guess what that country was?
I wouldn't know.
France. They gave their troops doxycycline, and when they left Iraq, they left everything behind. They left all their clothes, everything. They didn't take it home. They went around and brought this stuff back over to America, and this army surplus, and there was a guy down there that was doing it down in the Florida area, and he got it, and boy, he got pissed when he finally found out what had happened. But that's what the veterans are fighting, because there is no because it's a benefit. There are no regulations that have the force and effect of law, and Congress gets up there and they lie, and that's why when I was working with Joyce Riley, she had all these documents. They knew what they were doing to our troops. They know what they're doing now with this depleted uranium. They don't care. They're just an asset. So we'll get another one.
So
that's like the IRS. I figured it out now, you know, and I sent you the clips on this company. There is no law, there is no duty to file personal income taxes? None. And I can conclusively prove it now with their stuff, black and white.
And you do that, and you might explain a little bit on how you did that.
Well, how this works, you have to understand that the first thing that you have to do, people have to understand, you have to get the agencies where they live. They do not live in the codes, what we call public law today. They don't live there. They publish regulations. So the question in the Federal Register Act, it says, if it's required by an act of Congress, the agency shall publish in the Federal Register. It's a mandate. And it also says if it has general applicability and legal effect, that's a Federal Register Act. It's also under the APA, 5 U.S.C. 552A1. Subsidy regulations that have general applicability got to be published in the Federal Register. So we know where we go to look for these guys. Once you get them in the Federal Register, and this is what I didn't understand, is when Congress mandates to these agencies what's called legislative rulemaking or administrative legislative processes, where do I go look to find that list? Well, after talking to Amy Bunk, of the head attorney, there's only two of them at the Federal Register Office in D.C., she told me, she says, oh, well, that's in 1 CFR 21.43, after the table of contents. The statutory authorities are required to be published, and the agency publishes them. They're responsible for keeping them up to date. I did not know that. There are 13 volumes in the IRS. They're in all, behind all the parts, what they call parts or sections. They have to publish their statutory authority and the regulations that are affected. Well, in the Internal Revenue Service, there's a general grant under 26 USC 7805. That's a little confusing, but it's just a general grant. Those are all interpretive, easily proven, court cases, so you go look in those after the table of contents. Well, it says for returns, regulations prescribed by the secretary, that's 6011. Well, I go look in there, and there's only one has to do with the real estate investment trust, and there's a 1.6011-1, or -4, I'm sorry. It's reserved. So there's no regulations promulgated. Congress told the IRS, put your regulations out there so people can do it. They haven't promulgated them.
Now, when you say promulgated, explain.
They haven't published them in the Federal Register.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So then if you actually find some, because there are some regulations published with the statutory authorities, well, then you only got to go to the second prong, or the third prong, I'm sorry. So we say, okay, Congress said, like on assessments, the IRS can only proceed forward under the tax laws by tax stamps or by assessment. Congress said under 26 U.S.C. 6203, by regulations prescribed by the secretary. So I go behind these 13 books, table of contents. Is there anything 6203? No, doesn't exist. The IRS has never promulgated any regulations under the Congress said put them out there under this legislative grant to create a legal duty or obligation on the people. IRS has never done it because they can't.
Well, can you explain, Ralph, you say that these agencies are rottenly corrupt from the top to the bottom. What is the dynamics, or what are the dynamics that cause this corruption in these different agencies? And maybe you could focus in on a few of them, like the FEMA or the Federal Reserve or the Forest Service or something like
okay,
that.
Okay, well, let's just take FEMA. Because it has no lawful existence in a constitutional republic. We have a tripartite, a three-branch government under the Constitution. Right? We have the executive, which executes the laws. We have the legislative, which is supposed to enact the laws, and the judicial, which rules on them and enforces them. That's it. That's right out of the congressional record. They admit it. And they say, we've created a headless fourth branch of government. It's a complete overthrow of our constitutional republic. These things.
Well, okay, so who appoints the people to the positions of authority within these agencies?
Okay, let's take FEMA. And I don't know if exactly, but like with the IRS, that's done by the president with the consent of Congress. But the thing is, once they get there, nobody has any control over them no more. It's extremely difficult to fire them. They can't get rid of them. They can't be held accountable because they were set up to be politic outside of the constitutional republic, outside any political influence. They're going to live in utopia. That was what they were sold to be. Well, who in his right mind thinks that anybody is going to be in charge of anything and not be held accountable and going to do a good job?
So what do you think?
Well, we certainly saw some dramatic incompetence with FEMA right during the Hurricane Katrina catastrophe. And the fool that was appointed as head of FEMA by Bush happened to be, I think, one of his college roommates or something, whose only distinction was he was head of some horse club.
Did anything happen to him?
What's that?
Did they hold him accountable?
No, he was not held accountable. So that's a good example of what you're talking about.
Right. Then what they did, though, they had hearings, didn't they?
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, they did. They had some hearings. And they get the guy in there, and they talk. Hoo-ha. Oh, boy, I'm on the sidelines rooting. But what happens? Nothing, because Congress can't do anything to him. That's what people can't understand. They can't reach and reach out there and grab him and say, okay, that was criminal, or you're fired, or anything. They can't do it. What's so ludicrous about this.
So do you want to reiterate how they even created these agencies and why? Why would they go outside of Congress?
Well, you have to go back. It's kind of a long story, but it's a complete constitutional overthrow of the government. And basically this started after Andrew Jackson when he shut down the banks, the Bank of the United States. And in the 1840s, they quit putting laws into the Secretary of State's office. They changed the seal of the United States, couldn't count the 13 arrows, and that didn't get found out till 1882 on the 100th year anniversary of it. And they set the South up to fight because they were making them they were taxing so much on the cotton to support the North, so they got the South into it. It wasn't about the blacks and Negroes. Slavery was on its way out anyway. It wouldn't have made it. And then after the Civil War, they created the Reconstruction Acts, and the South, they forced them into this 14th Amendment. People think the citizen of the United States is such a great thing, and they just made it up. It's in 1866, and it's right in there today in the United States Code in Title 42, Section 1981, 82, and 88. What they did as a citizen of the United States is to have the same rights as white citizens. That's in the code today. But people don't know these things. They created a fictional entity. And then in 1870, which is what they could have done back then, they said, oh, by the way, we are going to make the African descent Negroes exactly the same as white, and they'll be called citizens of the United States of America. Everybody that's naturalized on their certificate, that's what it says. They could have done that then, but they didn't want to do it. So then they started after the, in 1875, they got around and they changed five words out of the Judiciary Act of 1789. Where an alien is a party to a citizen of a foreign state or something. There's five words. They just changed five words. And they unleashed the fictional citizen of the United States. And, of course, they keep coming along. And, of course, we get up and they kept screwing with the money system. And we got up in the 1913 era. And, of course, the Federal Reserve come along and all these other things that they were doing, these agencies then were starting to multiply. And you go back and look at the Attorney General's opinions after the Civil War. They couldn't figure out how to call in these independent establishments like the Interstate Commerce Commission. Are they inferior officers of the United States? Are they officers of the United States? Or what the heck are they? they didn't know what to call them because they'd created this fourth branch. And officially then, of course, they closed down the circuit courts of the United States in 1911 and put all the judicial power of the United States in the district courts. And then, of course, FDR came along, and the Depression, of course, that was all a set-up deal. But then as they're getting up there, well, there was only one, actually two constitutional courts left, the District Court of the United States, and in 1948, they very quietly put it back in the closet and created a fictional court called the United States District Court. That was done in 1948. They created the Administrative Procedures Act in 1946. They took away the land offices in 1946 and made Bureau of Land Management. This was the president doing all this stuff by these reorganization plans. He had no authority to take away constitutional offices, but he did it because nobody complained.
So who stands to gain by all this, though?
Oh, the bankers and all these people in the back, because what we are is we are slaves. Everybody's a slave in America to the banksters, and God knows who else is sitting behind the scenes. This is a way they create the illusion that we have a republic.
So what's going on right now with the trillions that they're putting us into debt is really kind of putting the nail on the coffin, letting us know that that's really what they think of us.
Yeah, but there's no lawful money. I mean, you go on the Treasury homepage, it says Federal Reserve notes have no value. What's a dollar? Dollar is a 1792. It is 371.25 grains of fine silver. It's never been changed. It's right in the Constitution. It has to have a weight, a measure. How do you measure a fictional thing called a Federal Reserve note? There's no silver. There's no gold. There's no nothing backing it up. It's just an illusion. It's monopoly money. Fiat. So we have no money system. People don't even know the correct name of the flag. What is the correct name of the flag of our Constitutional Republic? It's called the Flag of the United States. That was passed in 1818. There is no Flag of the United States of America. It's never enacted into law. That's another illusion. We have no money. No dollar has no value. People think they're citizens of the United States. Congress just made it up to have the same rights as a white citizen. Go look it up in 42 U.S.C., 1981, 82, and 88. The several states don't exist anymore. One of the things that you can tell easily is like the Constitution for Alaska. It should be called the Constitution of Alaska. I have it, by the way, the two sets of books that a person gave me. That's the only other thing that I offer out there for a donation. And it should be the Constitution of Alaska, the sovereign country of Alaska. No, we have the Constitution of the state of Alaska.
Well, while you're at it, why don't you just go ahead and give your website?
Yeah, well, that hasn't been updated for about 3 years. It's going to be so, but it's justbelly.com. If you want to get a hold of me, it's Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, at justbelly, J-U-S, and then bell, like you ring a bell, B-E-L-L-I.com. One of the things it does have on there is the thing about how under ACLA, the Annotated Code Laws of Alaska, it explains how an actual preliminary examinations, which they don't do today, there is no probable cause determinations, how grand juries are supposed to work. It's all there. I got it out of the territorial laws of Alaska, and I put it on my homepage. That's one of the best things that's on there. Go download it. It's free. It's in a PDF. People have no idea how all these things worked. And while they were doing all this overthrow back in the 30s and 40s, in 1934, under FDR, they got around and said, oh, by the way, we're going to redo the civil rules of procedure. So they handed that off and took it out of the legislative environment, the procedures, gave it to the Supreme Court of the United States. Supreme Court makes these rules, send it back to the Attorney General of the United States. They sit there for 6 months, and then they said, by the way, any other laws in conflict therewith with these rules that were enacted prior to are null and void. Then they, in 1940, because all this stuff was all planned out, in 1940 they said, well, we did good with the civil rules, let's do the criminal rules. So in 1940 they did the same thing. And in 1946, here comes the criminal rules of civil procedure. And anything in conflict with that, by the way, is null and void. And they changed Criminal Rule 7. We don't have to tell you the statute or regulation that you violated anymore. Really? Well, how in the heck am I going to find it if you don't tell me what I done did? This is why with the IRS and stuff, they won't tell you. They can't identify the law that you broke with the IRS because people don't understand. You would have to go into the regulations, and that's where you can clean your clock. This is just, I mean, it's so voluminous. And say, I've been tracking down all these things. I don't believe I appreciate the people that are out there that want to be called patriots, but boy, I tell you, you've got to get your research, and if you can't prove it, not going to happen. We have no constitutional republic. It's all gone. We have had a complete coup d'etat. There are no citizens of the several states that elect anybody anymore. It's all done by citizens of the United States. They don't exist. It's a fiction. Somebody that wants the same rights as a white citizen. Really. Is this unbelievable?
So when you're saying...
Go ahead.
When you're saying the rights of a white citizen, what are you saying there?
That is a citizen of one of the several states. That's why in Article 4, there is protections. If I back when we had a constitutional republic, if I went from the state of New York and I went to, let's say, Massachusetts or someplace, I was protected because I was going from one of the sovereign countries, which were in the Articles of Confederation, became known as the several states. So when I went from one state to another state, I had the same rights and privileges and immunities, technically is the word, that I had in the state where I left, or the person that was domiciled in that state. So I would be protected because it's if you can kind of think of it like the European Union in a way. Those were all sovereign countries, and then they all got under the European Union. Well, we had sovereign countries over here, and they were the lower case United States of America. And then, of course, when the Articles of Confederation came along, there was a corporate fiction set over the top called the United States of America. And in that are the several states. And then, of course, we came along after that, and they were a more perfect union and made the United States.
When did the Corporation of the United States get implemented? Was that right after the Civil War?
There's always been technically a corporate side to it, but I went back and I tracked that through Westlaw, because if you go back and look in the books, the Supreme Court volumes, you will see the United States or United States was the moving party. And by the way, that's still in the statutory law. Then around 1913 to 1960, all of a sudden, United States and the United States is no longer found, and you will find United States of America in all caps. Okay? Now, if you go into Westlaw and you go into LexisNexis, what you will see, which is quite interesting, United States will be in all caps, of is all lowercase, and America only has the first letter. So it's like the corporate side of America, the corporation. Now, of course, we know that's in what, Title 28, I think, 1331. And if you go look at all of the definitions of the United States, there is nothing to do with the several states. It's all something Congress just made up. And they have no authority to define United States. United States is in the Constitution. And so somewhere along in there, and I can't give you an exact date, but somewhere along after in the early 1900s, this corporate thing was on the rise. And I'll be honest, I haven't researched out to exact. If you go back in and look and see where that was first enacted, that would probably lead you to where this thing rose above the Constitutional Republic. But all of it started after the Civil War.
Now, is it possible when you're saying that the Administrative Act was put into place, it was also right about the time that they created the United Nations. Is there a relationship there?
Oh, I'm sure that was all interrelated. I don't know the total inner workings, but, they took the land away from us in 1946. There's no more land offices, the Bureau of Land Management, the Bretton Woods money guys, bankers all got together, and they had with this Bretton Woods agreement that happened in 1946. It's It all was set up during the basically the 1930s and then the 1940s, and after FDR, Truman finished it up.
So this is a kind of a multi-decadal strategy which has been implemented, as you say, to bring about a coup d'état and the demise of the republic, and the people that you hold responsible for this, I guess you say, are the bankers, the international bankers whose allegiance is not and never was to the United States.
Yeah, who in his right mind would turn over our money system, which we had a barter system with a real dollar? Who would turn it over to private 12 private banks that do not have our interest at heart? It's crazy. And that's why, I have a recording. If I could send it, if you have a way to play it, this was Greenspan. Said, there's nothing you can do to us until Congress changes something. We just do whatever we want. What's the problem?
Well, I'm sorry. I don't really have a way to play it. That's why I didn't try to. We were just now getting it back to where our Skype is functioning correctly for us. So I didn't want to push the system too much at this point. So,
well, isn't this crazy what I've been telling you? And what they did then after 1939, they passed the tax code laws, and there was no accountability. Then they tried to pass the Walter Logan Act in 1940, and that didn't pass during FDR's time because they said, well, we don't have any way to create the illusion of a substantive rig that has the force and effect of law. So, of course, World War II came along, and then in 1946, they said, well, now we've fixed that problem, and that one passed, the substantive rig. But the problem is, who's doing them? Well, nobody even knew they existed. Did you know before I talked to you that there are regulations that are called interpretive and benefits and all that that have no force or effect of law, and there's only one type called a substantive or substantive reg, and it has a mandated requirement. It must comply with 5 U.S.C. 553 B, C, and D. Did you know that? I didn't know that till this year, or actually last year.
Now, have you run across other people that were aware of it?
What I'm doing, nobody's doing. And it's not because I'm arrogant or anything. It's just that, and I'm trying to get the word out and tell me I'm wrong. Because I tell you what, that's why I spent so much time talking to the Federal Register people, talking. There's actually people with the IRS that were helpful. It took me a lot of time, but I get into the different chief counsel. Jim Gibbons is one of them that I got a recording of. And he said, yeah, we just do interpretive regs. What's the problem? Really? Well, why are people going to jail? Why are they losing their property? Because we're ignorant, stupid, and illiterate. We don't know. How would we know? Nobody teaches us this stuff. We think Congress is passing laws of the United States. Not going to happen. After February 25th, 1871, there have been no more laws of the United States. They took out in the sections, and be it further enacted, because each section is a separate thing, and it has to have that, and be it further enacted. And in 1871, they took that out because they started the revised statutes of 1873, 74, and 1878. And they actually tried to make those revised statutes throw out all prior laws of the United States. But they had so many errors, and the Supreme Court wouldn't go along with them, so they couldn't pull it off. So they said it's just prima facie evidence. Just looks like, but it's not.
So, but they all, do they all relate back to any of those laws when they use them in their addendums or that sort?
Oh yeah, they still go back to the. You go to Title 42, United States Code 1988, and it goes right back to the revised statutes of 1878. Oh yeah, they haven't wandered off because they can't.
Okay.
No, they still use that stuff because. It's just an illusion. It's like a magic trick. We see the rabbit come out of the hat, and the only way to kill this rabbit coming out of the hat is get up there and take a look inside the hat. And that's the Federal Register.
Now, one of the things when I recently went in and started looking at the Colorado statutes, I ran across something that I thought was rather curious that I'd never seen before. And it was a voluminous amount of references to the statutes being harmonized. Have you run across that?
Not the word harmonize. You mean within the state, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, first of all, there's this word codification, or codification, whichever way you want to pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
I spent an all day in the University of Alaska in Anchorage. I said, what does that word mean? Under the Roman civil law, it is a means to overthrow existing law with a process called codification. And what does codification allow you to do? It has a reviser of statutes, so that means somebody can come in and change the words around. We can also make laws, or what we call under codification, they can become obsolete. Really, how does a law become obsolete? Some person sitting in an office, oh, that one's obsolete. They can revise them, obsolete. Oh, they can do anything they want with them. And this is out of the Roman civil law. I have a book on that. That I finally found all this stuff lined up, because I said, I don't know what these things mean. How can I make a logical determination if I don't even know what the word means? Just like agency. You ask anybody, what's an agency? Where do they live? What do they do? People don't know. They think they're government. Agencies are not government. They got nothing to do. They live by regulations. The police departments, I got right out of the Wausau police departments, they all have what they call operating procedures manuals. It says right in it, we don't have any police power. We are professionals in making citizens arrest. How many people think you know that? They don't. How would they know? They got the guns. That's on my homepage, by the way, the Wausau police manual.
And yeah, how can we question that?
How can
we? A cop pulls us over and gives us a bogus ticket. How do we make it stick that they're not legally doing this?
Well, the Supreme Court has finally ruled that any time, and I tried to take a couple to the Supreme Court. I tried to do a writ of error. They don't do those. They quit those of declaring the law. This is the way the thing works for motor vehicles. Here's a brief overview. Anytime you register that motor vehicle, it's in every code in every state, without exception. It'll be in something dot 311. It's in the security section, and dot or something dot 505. And it says when you're a registered owner is a debtor, and the secured party is the other part of this. That's the state. So you're driving the states when you register it. You are in commercial law, and that's easily proven. And the only reason why I found that's because I got my hands on a banker's book that told me where to go look. And once I saw it, it's right there. Okay, so the first thing is you're driving in the commercial world. You're driving something that belongs to the state, whoever the state is. I don't know. Is it the state of Alaska? Is it? I don't know. But anyway, I'm a debtor. So the cop comes up. He sees you driving somebody else's car. So he comes up. It is a constitutional seizure. A constitutional seizure defined by the Supreme Court, finally, is any time a reasonable person can make a determination that you are not free to leave. And you have a right to challenge the court, or challenge the cop, the policeman that's pulled you over. So what I used to do, I started this, I said, am I under arrest? No. Am I free to go? No. Okay, well, that's a constitutional seizure. Well, then I invoke my right to assistant to counsel, the right to shut the heck up and not give evidence. Well, that's not the way to make friends with police. You got to be very careful doing that, because some of these guys are really dangerous. I mean, they really are. They've not had anybody challenge them before. And the first time I did that, well, they said, we want to see registration. I said, well, I'm still waiting on assistant to counsel. You want to go out for pizza? Because we're going to be here a while, Bubba. Then they want to see proof of insurance. I said, hey, I'm invoking my Fifth Amendment right not to give evidence against myself. So they said I was under arrest. I said, really? I said, okay, that's fine. I said, I had a video camera going. I had somebody with a witness. I put my hands on the steering wheel. I always get my hands on the steering wheel. I rolled the window down not very much, because so they don't pepper spray me. And I said, if you think you have the right to arrest me for a crime, just pop the window. I'm not going to make a move. They went back, and what I did not know at that time, which I now do know, the police in Alaska have an attorney on call 24 hours a day. So the cops went back and called that attorney, and they said, nope, don't go there. So they backed down. That's how I challenge them. Am I under arrest? Am I free to go? And I have a right of assistance of counsel before I answer any questions. I don't have to give you any evidence. Do I recommend it for most people? No. If you proceed down that road, it's very, very dangerous because some of these cops are, they just totally lose it. They really do. They hire military, ex-military. They like IQs around 115 to 118. That's in the hiring things of the troopers of Alaska because then they know they're smart enough to take orders and do what they need them to be done. They're good soldiers, but they're not smart enough to figure out that what's really the, what the game is.
Okay, Ralph, let me stop here just a second and do a station ID. And it's, you're listening to Truth Quest with Melody on KHEN LPFM Radio, 106.9 Salida, Colorado, community-supported radio. And we're streamed on the Internet at khen.org. And if you'd like to listen to tonight's program or any past programs of Truth Quest with Melody, they're available at www.gimmesometruth.info or linked from the khen.org website. And I also want to state that the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And again, my co-host this evening is Dr. Eric Carlstrom, and our guest is Ralph Winterrude. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I have a question for you, Ralph.
Sure.
We're trying to get to the connection, say, between legitimate government and what's not so legitimate. So for legitimate government, we'd have a federal, state, county governments, which are under constitutional authority, I would assume, and then, but they would rely heavily on many of these agencies, which you would say are not constitutional. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, some of the things that have to be done. Number one, we have to kill agencies, and I don't mean kill the agents, the agencies. The IRS, the state taxation laws, are piggybacked on the federal taxation. And the federal taxation, I can conclusively prove, has no authority to tax anybody. Period. End of story. It's over. All of these agencies are tied together. So, first of all, we have to understand what they've been playing chess, and we've been playing checkers. We got to get on the same playing field and understand there's been a complete coup d'etat. It's gone, folks. Okay, so we got number one things we have to do. We have to expose these agencies for what they are and get them out of our life. Get the taxation back within the states. The people have to understand that the citizens of the several states is where you have constitutional protections. A citizen of the United States has a fiction in law. It has no protections other than the illusion, because in reality, technically, the Bill of Rights that we like to rely upon, and even I've quoted, does not have application until you go through the 14th Amendment. And what they did, they created created a citizen of the United States in 1866. Then they memorialized it in the 14th Amendment to make it so we can't get out from under it.
So
that's a tough nut.
Okay, so in other words, you're saying that, you know, the federal jurisdiction is fake, but what makes you think that they haven't usurped the state jurisdiction?
Well, they have, because it's a fiction in law, because this is why they use the you'll see in these acts where they'll have like the territorial or geographical boundaries of the United States. That is the same area that corporations operate in. I had a corporation at one time. I operated in the territorial or geographical boundaries of the United States. The United States only has jurisdiction in places where land has been ceded to the United States or and different areas under interstate commerce and that. It was a very limited areas where they could get involved. Today, they're everywhere. It don't make a difference where you are. And you can be charged with a state crime and a federal crime. How can I do that? There's cases back around the turn of the century. See, you can't do that. You got to be under one jurisdiction or the other. Today, it's both. If we don't get you with a state law, they charge you with a federal law. Wait a minute. Where's the land? How do you get jurisdiction over me? Yeah, we have to attach to the land. And this is one of the things that you can tell, which I didn't finish. Go look, first of all, see if it's called the Constitution of the State of New York or the Constitution of New York. The other thing, it's called under the Laws of Mortmain, Dead Hand, because all organic and all corporations operate under the laws of Mortmain, the Dead Hand. That's the seal. Because something has to, the secretary is where that power is usually posited, is when that seal goes on, that is the dead hand, that's the signature of the fiction, or of the organic state. Alaska's running with two right now. Territory, they ran with two. Easily proven. So, but how do I find out, because the word constitution has a meaning both in the world of corporations and also in the organic constitution. How do I tell the difference? Easily. All organic constitutions must only have external amendments. The internal constitution can never be, any word can never be changed. It can only have external amendments. Constitutions of fictions called corporations, always they rewrite the amendments and put them in and rewrite them every year or whenever. The Constitution of the State of Alaska, not the Constitution of Alaska, every year they go in and do a total rewrite and reprint it. It's a fiction. There are no external amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska. It should be the Constitution of Alaska, the country, the one of the several states. Amazing, this stuff that these lawyers, these wordsmithers, have done. And these things have just taken me, I wouldn't even want to guess how many hundreds or thousands of hours. Because when I had my company, I bought about $60,000 worth of old books. I've got three originals of the original 13th Amendment. One of them is a very rare book out of Virginia. I give $1,000 for a two-volume original set. The original 13th Amendment.
And what is different about that original one from the...
Titles of nobility. Lawyers, they couldn't serve. These lawyers couldn't have titles of nobility. No more esquires. You can't trust a wordsmither in government.
Now, the lawyers back in ancient times, were they the scribes?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I got an opinion, but I'm not going to state it because I can't prove it without.
I think I heard somewhere, and it might have been one of these interviews that I've done with Melody, that lawyers take some kind of an oath to the City of London power structure in some way or another.
I've heard all that. I have no evidence of it. I can't prove it.
In their schooling, is there anything that's particularly that would bias them towards a particular worldview or kind of towards a particular side?
Can I rephrase your question? I think what you're asking is there some means that wherein attorneys, lawyers is a general word, counselors at law is the party initially, and that was found in the Giles-Jacobs law dictionaries, and it was also... done in 1810, I got the books on that. Technically, counselors at law didn't work for a living, and they could stand up to, and they worked only for you. Attorneys were subordinate, and they worked for the fictions. That's in the Giles-Jacobs of 1791. I have an original book of that. That's another $1,000 I spent, and it was also in a republishing under the I can't think what it's called right now, but if there's law book exchange, you could buy a republished set of that as it had application to America. But the question becomes, how do they control what we shall call lawyers? Because there are no counselors at law anymore. They're all attorneys. There's a few that will say counselor, but they used to be counselors at law. And you can find that on some of the older books if you go back and look at the authorities. They didn't say attorneys. They were counselors at law. But how do they control attorneys or lawyers, which is a generic word for both, how do they control them today? Quite easily. It's called the Professional Code of Conduct. In Alaska, they have to take an oath and sign an affidavit that they will abide by the Professional Code of Conduct. And in that professional code of conduct, there's nothing about obeying any constitutional provisions. But in the judicial code, of which our judges have, it says they do the law and the facts both. In the professional code of conduct, it's, I think, rule point 1, I have it brought up, but it's 1.1, 1.4, somewhere along in there. There's only four things they have to tell the client. The client can either plea not guilty or not guilty. I'll look that up in a minute. The other one is about appeal and whether he wants to testify or not. There are only four things that the client is allowed to do, and people don't know that. When you hire an attorney, you just turn over your whole life to a guy that's only got to do a couple things, and he can go make deals and do anything you want, and there ain't nothing you can do about it. They control them by the professional code of conduct. That's how they control the attorneys.
Okay, and who wrote that? And for what?
Came about around the turn of the century, and who actually started it, I really don't know. I just know it exists because I've looked it up in different states. And while we're talking here, I'll pull that up, and I will tell you the four things that that done. And basically, if you want to get down to it, and it's not an arrogant statement, but most attorneys are suffering from an inferior legal education. They've never been taught this stuff. They haven't. They really haven't. Go talk to them about it. Ask them about preliminary examinations. Where's the probable cause determination? They don't do it anymore. They take you right to the grand jury. A grand jury cannot make a probable cause determination. What's supposed to happen, and people don't even know this, all misdemeanors. The cop or whoever files a misdemeanor is the private prosecutor. He has to have many case law everywhere. Whoever files the misdemeanor charge must have personal, visual, firsthand knowledge that you committed, quote, a crime. That's all misdemeanors. Felonies you do not. But misdemeanors do. And the guy that files the charge, the cop, is a private prosecutor. There's case law on that in Alaska.
Well, one thing about that, when you say crime, from my understanding, crime is where there has to be an injured party. And if you're getting pulled over for a speeding ticket or whatever, does that constitute a crime?
Nope. That's why they say they are called violations if you're under the state. They're called infractions if you're under the municipal code. And maximum fine, $300, and there is no jail.
But he gets to act as a prosecutor.
That's right. That's why up here in Alaska, anyway, you go into all these infractions and violations. There's no attorney there, except when I show up, they bring in an attorney. Because I'll run that cop and the judge both up the flagpole about a dozen times, and pretty soon they start getting a headache.
So how?
But the average guy doesn't know that.
Okay, so then how do you deal with these cameras that send you a violation statement in the mail?
They have to have who's going to testify to all that stuff. They actually started that nonsense up here, and they had to take it all out because it was a constitutional violation. They had nobody even on the traffic because they use a quasi-criminal rules, and there's nobody to testify. I want to call a camera. Come on, camera. Hello? Oh, you don't speak. Really? Where's your knowledge? But, of course, see, that technically is not a misdemeanor, and they call it quasi-criminal in Alaska. And they actually have criminal rules for quasi-criminal. Hoo-ha.
So,
but you have the right to discovery. You have the right to exculpatory, which is evidence that will help you. You have right to inculpatory, which is used against you. That's under Strickler versus Green. You have the right to Brady materials. You have a right to evidentiary hearings if you can prove something that's going on. All these things all come into play, but the average person doesn't know all this stuff. How will they know all this stuff? They're trying to make a living. And we think we have and been taught to have respect for government. I don't respect it anymore. I want my country back. And there are some good cops. I know a few. They'd like to see it changed. But if they speak up, you know what happens? They get fired. So they have no choice.
Interesting situation,
isn't it?
So did you have an opportunity to kind of explain a little bit on the IRS thing that you'd been working with lately on improving, you know, what it...
Here is the real key to exposing the IRS. Let me give you the overview. It'll take me about 10 minutes probably.
Okay.
In 1953, after the Administrative Procedures Act had came along and said, you guys are supposed to do subsidy regulations if they're going to create a duty or an obligation. IRS didn't do it. Why would they do it? Nobody's, you know, it's utopia. These guys are good guys, right? So in 1953, they published 429 pages of all the regulations. Back then they were called Part 39, so it would be like 26 CFR 39 point something. And they said, we ain't doing that APA. That was Section 4A and 4B, or 4C, back in that time of 1946. In 1954, they come along and they published a whole new Internal Revenue Code. Totally did a total rewrite of it. In 1954, in the Federal Register, the IRS comes out, Internal Revenue Service, under the commissioner's signature, and said, we ain't doing that stinking APA. Great, okay. Because it would cause a delay and it's against public interest. Really? So then what they did, in 1960, what are called Part 1, which is a 26 CFR 1 point something. So a Part 1 regulation is individual income taxes. They republished all of them in 1960. Also in 1960, they republished what's called Part 31, which is the employer regulations. So, did those comply? Or were they subsidy? Did they have the forced and effective law? What they did, they published those in November of 1960. December 31st, they published another regulation that said, oh, by the way, for compliance with the APA, go back to 1954, to 19 FR 5167. That's Volume 19, Federal Register, and then it starts on page 5167. And that's the one that says, we ain't doing that stinking APA because it's against public. It causes a delay and against public interest. So all of the regulation of 1960 to do with the individual income tax and all of them to do with employee or employers have no force and effect of law. That's conclusive. In the 13 volumes that are public, they publish every year in the law libraries of the public documents for the Part 1, there's 13 volumes. The very first of volume on page 3, they say, oh, by the way, here is our 19 FR 5167 of 1954. But they leave off the last paragraph because we're not supposed to know. We're on a need-to-know basis. We ain't doing that stinking APA.
So then you go ahead. So what you're saying, in other words, that there's the newer regulations are referring to older regulations that already say that they're not going to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, all of the older ones that were republished, the start ones that started in 1960, none of them had the force and effect of law. So we go then in those books, and it's mandated behind the table of contents of each one of those 13 books. The agency must show any regulation and the statutory authority for it. They have to have a statutory authority to make what's called subsidy regulations. There are ones in there that would give the illusion of a subsidy reg. But two of them that are missing notably right off the top is, well, where is the one for returns for the 1040, 6011? There are one's reserved, one ain't got nothing to do with nothing. Where's the one for assessment? Has never been done. The one for wages, everybody thinks they have wages. That's in 3401, 3402, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Well, I go in the ones for wages. And those are 1.1441-2-3-4. They're all for non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. Well, I'm not a non-resident alien. I don't think I'm a foreign corporation. So the ones that are listed give the illusion, well, if you want to look up any of them that are listed, because they're mandated to be there, because that's under the Federal Register Act of 1935. They told this Federal Register Commission to implement regulations, and that's what they did. In 1972, they did a rewrite on them to make them compliant with the APA, the administrative, and they said, you, the agency, have to tell us so the public can figure out where is the statutory authority and what regulations have statutory authority. So they put them behind the table of contents. So the ones that are like, there's no returns, there's no assessments, there's no wages for people. Well, wait a minute. Congress said do it, and they didn't do it. Okay, so you take the regulations that do exist with some statutory authority, like, say, 1.1441-2 for non-resident alien foreign corporations. So you go into the regulation, and at the bottom of all those, they have to list where they amended it in the Federal Register. That's where the only place agencies tell you the truth. Well, I go in there and it says, we ain't doing that stinking APA 5 USC 553B for good cause. We just ain't doing it.
Okay, so what I think I'm hearing you say then is they can pretty much make up what they want to do?
Yeah, because we do not understand. We have the perception that agencies are government. They are not. They're mercenaries. Some got guns, some don't. The only way an agency can reach back through the fictional world in this portal and grab a hold of you and me is by what's called a subsidy regulations. And that final test is 5 U.S.C. 553 B, C, and D. And the courts know. I've got decisions. They played it out. Yeah, we know that, so what's the problem? You all out there just don't understand what's going on. You're over here playing around in the code, and you can't beat them because the agencies don't live there. They're not government, folks.
Okay, now code.
We ain't gonna tell you that.
Is code and statute the same thing?
No, because a statute of the United States or laws of the United States is in Article 6 of the Constitution of the United States or the Federal Constitution. These what we call codes is where this is the process called codification, which is where they get rid of existing law and replace it with new law because they can revise it, obsolete it, do anything they want with it. They can take parts of it out. They can add parts. They can do whatever they feel like.
Okay, so if you have a statute, they can codify it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but see, what they did is they, if you track the public, if you start off with the very first in 1789, it says statutes of the United States, laws of the United States. It says laws of the United States, and it says statute one, statute two. Around the 1840s, they started bringing in what's called public laws. Public laws are any type of law in the whole world. And then by the time we get up farther down the road, everything is all public laws. Everything is a PL. Wait a minute, what happened to statute of the United States? What happened to laws of the United States? Well, there's no constitutional republic, so we can't do them. And after 1871, they can't do them. Go into the front of the books, go to the law library and take a little time. Just open up the front and start looking. Start at the very first one in 1789, which I did. I go down, I look, and you start seeing, oh, well, now we're changing here. Now we're making a change. Oh, so wait a minute. What happened to laws of the United States that they printed in the statutes at large? Why are they no longer there? Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm, and it's been a while since I've looked at a lot of these statute books, but I'm trying to get a grasp on when they come in and they change the wording, you know, periodically on, and of course the meaning or the interpretation, and they back it up with a case and that sort.
Well, go into the front of the books,
mm-hmm,
and start looking right there. Use as the thing that I do. It's like you can't have a more, if you're a Christian, what's your standard or called standard of review? It's the Ten Commandments, right?
Okay.
Okay, in law, there's got to be a standard of review. And anytime you go up on appeal, what's your standard of review? You have to have some standard for anything that you measure, whether it's true or false or whatever. So the standard is go back and look and see what they started off with in the Constitutional Republic and then see how they changed it. Just like they didn't used to say, like the Health Care Act today, 200 times it says they're going to do regulations. Wait a minute. They didn't used to do that in the laws of the United States. They made laws. And go look at your court decisions. They didn't used to say, oh, by rule so-and-so, and rule so-and-so and rule ad nauseum, because what they do today is these courts are, in essence, they're another agency, because in 1988, Congress passed a, quote, act that says the Supreme Court of the United States no longer has to declare the law. Really? I thought that's what they did. So now what you see is we go up on what's called a writ of certiorari, and the Supreme Court, nine dictators now, that's what they are, every Friday get together. And they look at all of the quote, writ of certiorari. It's not a true writ of certiorari. They're not bringing the law up at all. And four of them have to say, well, I don't know. What do you think there, Roberts? Is there any four of you would like to do this here thing that Melanie's bringing up? Nah, let's just leave that alone. We don't want to mess with that because we don't have to do it. Let's just pick and choose what we want to do. So they don't have to declare the law. You find that in the footnotes in 28 U.S.C. 12, 51, 52, 53, 54, somewhere along in there. They don't have to do it no more, really. This is why we're in such a heck of a fix, because who's going to declare the law? And they also have the audacity to say, oh, by the way, when we say we're denying your writ of certiorari, it doesn't mean that the lower court's right. It just means we don't want to talk about it.
Well, also, what I think I'm hearing you say then, and I've seen this in practice, I believe, is that even among the people that are implementing these regulations and that sort, they're under the understanding that they have an effect, correct?
Well, of course they do. It's all compartmentalized. They're on a need to know, just like the CIA. They don't know what's going on. How would they know?
So it's until you challenge them, would anybody even find out that, you know, it's kind of arbitrary then?
But you don't know how to, first of all, on any regulation, you must look, if you have Westlaw or something, but you got to go to the law library, or if you got Westlaw, you could see it. There has to be, and they will do like Title 49, transportation. They'll put a public law there. And the states have adopted, by reference, Title 49, the CFRs for transportation and all that. So you have to go look at a specific, because they don't list them out, because they can't, because they already know they're beat. But you have to take, because I'm dealing with a gentleman up here, and we've got a couple of those sitting in the Court of Appeals right now of Alaska. They have these regulations. You go into the Federal Register, and there's no forced effect of law. They say, we ain't doing that stinking APA. You're not supposed to know about that. This is called an interpretive reg. It's just some attorney's opinion.
Okay, so how are you challenging these if they can say they don't have to do it?
Because you challenge them if it's just an interpretive reg. There's holdings in the 8th Circuit, 9th Circuit says you cannot violate or be held accountable legally in any manner. No duty obligation is created by an interpretive reg.
And are you
having some attorney's opinion.
Okay, so you're having coming out on these pretty good, or?
Well, we've stopped some of these things right now. I'm working with some different cases where I give resource material to people in the IRS, and all of a sudden they're pulling up short. Now we got two mandamuses that are sitting in ready for discovery with interrogatories and stuff, because the courts are finding, oh my God, somebody pulled back the curtain on the Wizard of Oz and he ain't got no clothes on. Oh my, that's a scary.
So it's making them have to even look within their own agencies as to what they're working under.
Yeah, some of these local DOJ guys, Department of Justice guys don't know. The ones back in D.C. do. Nolet and some of them other ones back there, they know. Ashulani.
Well, you mentioned the CIA. Do you have some kind of insight into that agency? And
well, not really, but I can tell you one that I did call on, the Real ID Act. Everybody thinks the Real ID Act has application to us, right? How do I disprove it? I have a recording. I called in to Amy Bunk, and I said, because I didn't understand it. I said, how come I go into the regulation, which I think was 2008, the Federal Register, for the Real ID Act, and I read all this stuff. I don't see any application to the Administrative Procedures Act, APA. It has to stay in there, APA. She enlightened me. She says, oh, by the way, Congress said for Homeland Security, they give them a pass. You don't have to do the APA. You don't have to do Chapter 5. Well, if you don't do Chapter 5, which is 5 USC 553 B, C, and D, this is the same as saying to Congress, oh, by the way, you don't have to vote on this bill. The president don't have to sign it. You just get around and propose it, and then nobody will ever know the difference. So Congress, in the Real ID Act, said, oh, by the way, Homeland Security, you don't have to do that stinking Chapter 5 nonsense. So they have a comment period, but it has no force and effect of law.
So I guess I'm kind of you lost me a little bit, because how do you challenge an agency that has no jurisdiction yet takes it and has no force and effect of law but acts like it does?
Okay. You have to go into the Federal Register to find the regulation and see if it says it's in compliance with 553. Yes or no. If it doesn't mention it, it's all smoke. If it does mention it, it's going to say, we ain't doing it. I've not even seen one yet that says we're going to do it. I'm still looking for one. There's got to be one out there somewhere, I'm sure, on some little nonsense thing. But they say, no, we're not doing it. Or they don't even mention it. So if it's like I say, it's the same comparison to Congress saying, we don't have to vote on it. The president don't have to sign it because we just made a bill. We just put out a bill, and you folks out there don't know what that means. So the agency puts out a regulation, goes through the process, but they don't ever say, oh, it's in compliance with 553 B, C, and D. We have to give you guys notice, because in reality, in America, we're being ruled by legal notice of the Federal Register. Legal notice. So just like the legal notice in a newspaper, all states have their own Administrative Procedures Acts. They all have their own registers. Alaska, they call it the Alaska Journal. They put out regulations, just like the big boys.
And
every state has them.
And so you think on the state and federal level, the representatives are aware of this?
Well, we had a Senator Ogun. He got crossways with another thing and had to resign. But he was real honest about it. He said, these agencies have too much power. Because the legislators fund them, and they give them directives. Go out here and build a house. And then the agency builds any kind of house they want. Really. That's the illusion, the fourth branch. That's what makes it so dangerous, because there's no head to it. It's called the headless fourth branch of government. That's right in FDR, the book that he wanted published. And they brought it right out. So it's called the headless fourth branch of government. These things are little independent governments. What do you fight? You can't fire them. We don't hire them. They're not accountable to anybody. People don't even know that they operate by regulations. They don't operate by code. They have some code directives. But all of these agencies all have regulations behind the scenes, without exception. They all have regulations.
Okay.
They don't tell us that.
Okay. Okay, let's take the example, for instance, of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service.
Mm-hmm.
They of course, walk the employees of the Fish and Wildlife Service walk around with government-looking uniforms, and they get paid by the U.S. government. But you will say that as an agency, they are really mercenaries, and they are not constitutional. They are not constitutionally authorized. Is that
right?
That
yeah, because let's just step back. You tripped over a word called employee. In a constitutional republic, they're called public officers. At the state level, at the federal level, they're called officers of the United States or inferior officers of the United States. A public officer must have an office with powers and duties. They must have some delegation of the sovereignty of either the United States or one of the several states. So they have to have what's called an office. Think of it as like a house. You got to have a plumber, okay? Well, this is what plumbers do. Somebody's got to create the office. They say, this is what you do. They can only enter that office by a certificate of election from the people or by a civil commission, which means somebody can be put in power to appoint them. When they enter that office, they must have an oath of office as a public officer, not just an oath of office, oath of office as a public officer, an oath of office as an officer of the United States, oath of office as an inferior officer of the United States. Okay? If they're handling money, they used to have to post what's called an official bond. They had to put up two things of their private assets. That's what kept them honest. Because if you go to work in the government, and I'm a public officer, and it's still in the code in Title 39 of official bonds. You know how many official bonds exist in Alaska? None. Because we don't have any public officers. Anytime the word employee comes out, employees exercise no sovereignty of any of the several states or the United States. They're flunkies. They operate by regulations. They always have. They're regulated. They hold no office. They can be hired or fired tomorrow. They hire them one day, fire them the next day.
So if you're saying regulation, doesn't that put them in a commercial capacity?
No.
Okay.
You can have regulation in a commercial capacity, but the regulations exist in this, what's called the administrative state. Is there a commercial courts, a commercial aspects, all this stuff? Absolutely. Can you beat them in commerce? No. Because the bankers operate in commerce. Do they have integrity? Do our unalienable rights have any standing in the world of commerce? No.
Well, you will admit that there are many, many government agencies that have done a lot of good work that has benefited our country. For instance, the National Park Service and the U.S. Geological Survey and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the U.S. Forest Service.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that at all. Mafia is probably good if you look at in certain aspects, depending on your perspective.
Well, I don't see the connection. Explain what the connection is, say, between
that's a bit of an off-point metaphor.
Park Service and the Mafia.
Well, I just did, but, I mean, these guys get in there, and they're like little tin gods, though. They get in there, and they put on a uniform and give them a gun, and God help you. I mean, some of them are just, Katie, bar the door. No, I don't disagree. That's how they stay in power, because we don't understand how they work, and they do some good. I don't disagree with that at all, absolutely. But that doesn't make it right. And the real thing of a whole constitutional republic is we set up with inalienable rights from the Creator at the top of the heap. And we have a constitution, a limited delegation of power. And in that limited delegation of power, to exercise the sovereignty, there are different offices. And to enter those offices, they either get there by a certificate of election from the people or by a civil commission. They post their bonds, official bonds, so they keep themselves honest. We have the ability to hire them and fire them. And at the very bottom of the heap is called a corporation, a fiction. Today, it's all inverted. The corporations sit at the top.
That certainly is the case. And, of course, that has something to do with the 14th Amendment and a ruling in 1886, I believe, Santa Clara County versus Southern Pacific Railroad, in which the rights of personhood were granted to corporations by a court recorder, actually, and then that got grandfathered into further rulings. That issue, I 1,000% agree, is completely out of whack, and if we were to rescind the Bill of Rights to corporations and just make sure that they do not enjoy the rights of personhood, that would take us in a long, giant stride towards fixing these problems, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. But the bottom line is, just like the Supreme Court ruled, now the corporations can contribute unlimited amounts of money.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
How could a corporation, and this is another one of the little games that they play, there used to be municipal charters. The powers granted had to be in the municipal charter of the corporation. Well, what they do today to get around this, they still list out, you got the power to do this, the power to do that. And then they say you've got other powers not prohibited by law. Go look in some of your corporate charters. Not prohibited by law, which by law can have several meanings. As we think of it as by the legislature, by Congress, but that's been changed in 1947 and in the Administrative Procedures Act, which means anything on this damn earth, pardon my French, but it's by treaty, by whatever's. but they put not prohibited by law. So you've got all these things you can do, and then they surround not prohibited by law, which we'll take it for the best cases, not prohibited by the legislature. Now, is that any way that anybody would create a fiction in law? By the way, you can do A, B, C, and D, and by the way, you can do anything else that we haven't prohibited. Really? How do I figure that one out? Go check some of your municipal charters and see if it doesn't say not prohibited by law.
But if they quit writing law and they only have these regulations that are codified, am I saying this correctly? Then essentially, it's not applicable anyways. Correct?
The whole thing is right. Technically, there are no laws of the United States. We have ordinances, but technically, they don't have application. Even in the Anchorage ordinances, it talks about the laws have applications to stuff that's owned by the corporation or the state, the vehicles. They put it right there. It's in Ordinance 9 in the Constitution of the state of Alaska. They get around and put it. It's in the Charter of Anchorage. They tax our private interest in property owned or held by the government. Really?
Well,
does that mean?
Okay, but then most all of these government entities are incorporated, meaning also that they're listed in Dun and Bradstreet and that sort. So ultimately, they're again running under the commercial law in the first place, right?
Well, yeah, it's in commercial law, but they're fictions. They're fiction. That's corporate entities. They just made them up. And how do you trap them? Let me give you an example. An 80-year-old child could look at a dog or a cat and almost 100% identify it in a matter of seconds. That's a dog or that's a cat. Would you agree to that?
Mm-hmm.
Could you write a legal brief to identify a dog or a cat, something that you could in reality see and make a decision like just like that? That'd be very difficult. Now, with that said, something that we can actually, that's reality, which means that what I see and what you see are the same thing, you know, or what we touch, feel, all that. Try to trap a fiction in law in writing. Do you start to see the problem? Because how do I trap something that somebody just made up? How do I prove this fiction in law doesn't have any application to you or me? Do you see the problem? And that's what I've finally been able to do with the IRS and these agencies. And it becomes actually quite simple. I'm rewriting the stuff, and I'm going to put together one line. I'm going to put it out there for the whole world to see. And but you have to trap them by their own confessions. Because if you try to trap them just with court documents, well, the court says, well, we didn't really mean it that way, or they meant it this way, and on and on and on ago. This is by acts of Congress and by where they have to, in the Federal Register, say, this is what I am. This is my confession. I'm doing it or I'm not doing it.
Okay, now, when you're talking about Federal Register and not having to apply to the APA, Administrative Procedures Act, there's a difference here, because one of them saying they have to comply, but they say they're not going to comply to it, right?
Yeah, well, if they don't comply, and the only place you can prove it conclusively is in the Federal Register.
Okay, so when they say they don't say anything, how do you trap them?
Well, you have to go into Federal Register, and they'll say, we aren't going to do 5 U.S.C. 553B. They will say that. And 553B is notice and comment. As soon as they do that, ball game's over. It's an interpretive reg, or it's agency, or it's a benefit. And if it doesn't say anything in there, if it doesn't say anything, then it's like Homeland Security. Congress is hiding it. They say, oh, by the way, this agency's out there, but they don't make any regulations that have the force and effect of law, but you guys don't know how it works. So we'll just go ahead and have them put comments in there, but it doesn't mention the APA.
So if it says do they drop it if you catch them?
Well, what they did with Homeland Security when they got ready to do the Real ID Act, they said, oh, by the way, Homeland Security, don't do the APA Chapter 5. Just go ahead and put the comments in for the people that don't know how this system works. So everybody puts a comment in, they answer them. But it's the same thing again as Congress saying, oh, we're going to propose bills. But, oh, by the way, we're not going to vote for them. And the president's not going to sign them. That's the equivalent of 553 B, C, and D.
Okay, but I guess what I'm having a hard time putting my wrapping myself around here is the fact that, okay, if you're going to challenge them on this, where is it going to get you?
Well, you have to go in. Like I say, first of all, you have to prove that they have to come out of the code into regulation, and that's under the Administrative Procedures Act because it says if it's required by Act of Congress. And in the IRS, it's regulations prescribed by the secretary. And so then all of them have to, behind their part or section, they have to show the code sections or the public laws. And they have to list the regulations. They have to list them. So you go there, and then if there are any listed, like on the IRS, there are for a bunch of nonsense, you go to the third prong, you just go into the federal register, like at 1.1441-2 for non-resident aliens and corporations for wages. It's under 3402A6. And it says, oh, by the way, okay, there's a statutory authority. So then you go to prong three. You go into the federal register because I have to publish these regulations in the federal register. So I go in there and look at it. It says, we ain't doing that stinking APA. We ain't doing 553 B. Well, okay, so we got some attorney that made an opinion back there. Well, that's great. You talk to every attorney and they all got an opinion. That's nice. They have no force and effect of law.
Okay, so where does it go from there generally?
Then what I found from Amy Bunk, she says, if you want to enforce any of this, the agencies don't have to do it. Congress doesn't do it. There's no oversight. You have to take that agency to court on those regulations. But you have to know how to plead it. Because if you know how to plead it, you'll get your clock cleaned.
And is that what you're doing now on some of these?
That's what I'm getting ready to do. But what I've done is exposed that they don't have any subsidy regulations with the IRS. So if you have no regulations that have the force and effect of law, why are you pestering me? Why are people going to jail? That's where I am right now.
Okay, and when you're saying Amy Bunk, she is?
She's the head attorney of the two at the Federal Register.
And that's located in D.C.?
D.C.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I can send you some recordings of her. We can't play them, but yeah, I've got recordings of her.
I was listening to several of them when you were talking to her. But I just wanted my audience to understand what, you know, who and what she was and why you had referred to her. So.
Well, I have questions. So what I do is I get on the phone, just like when I found Jim Gibbons and the chief counsel. It took me 4 hours that day to calling around. I just sat up here with my Skype, and I just kept calling and calling and calling, and I finally find an office with somebody there, and he just lays it out. He even sent me the document from a law professor that was published out of Minnesota that said, she's scratching her head, said, why doesn't anybody understand that the IRS is just doing interpretive rigs? Why doesn't anybody hold them accountable? This is a law professor. She didn't understand. She said, why doesn't somebody take these guys on?
So in other words, when they've been challenged, when they've been challenged, they have not been challenged in a way that really made them stand up and have to prove anything.
We're playing checkers and they're playing chess.
Okay. All right.
You've got to get the rules of the game before you're ever going to go anywhere. It'd be just like a physician, somebody that's a pill pusher and somebody that does surgery. Hey, guess what? You know, being a physician doesn't mean that you have to understand how surgery is done before you know you're being screwed.
Hey, Dr. Carlstrom, how are you taking all this and understanding? What are your feelings?
Well, you know, this is way out of my area of experience and expertise, so I'm interested to learn what I can. But obviously, Ralph has a lot of knowledge on this, and so you know, it's a revelation to me. I guess that it's not a revelation to me that FEMA is extra constitutional, or that Homeland Security is extra constitutional. But some of these other agencies that I've grown up with have always considered to be positive elements of government. So I'm still having a hard time seeing that they are somehow bad for us and for the country. I think, yes, they need to be kept accountable, and we need to know how to keep them accountable. And in that sense, this kind of research is very useful. But in general, I think we're better off having some of these agencies than not having some of these agencies. So I guess I would have a different perception of what the problem is. Certainly there's problems with the IRS, you know, that put this in an adversarial relationship with the government in terms of money. But there's so many agencies, and we need, I think, many of these agencies. So that's my perspective on it, that I'm trying to just learn.
What we need is a constitutional republic where the people, where they used to have a government, that if they were going to be fish and game, the people that were in there, we could hold accountable and fire the suckers.
What
like
I,
a sheriff.
What
like,
I'm,
you know, like a sheriff. We have police now. Police chiefs are beholden to the mayor. They don't work for anybody. They don't post a bond. We can't hold them accountable. Talk about the state troopers, the policeman. He doesn't work for anybody. He's an, quote, an employee protected by a, quote, union. You can't hold them accountable. They can do whatever they darn well want and get away with, as long as they don't get too carried away. Hell, why do they get around and beat up people and do all sorts of stuff and they don't get prosecuted with a crime? But if I get around, and I've tested this, I walk up to a policeman and I touch him, I can be charged with assault. And I took him to court up here. I didn't win civilly. It took me, I won at the Ninth Circuit, come back, and the dang judge changed the jury instructions around so I couldn't win. I didn't have the money to go back up on appeal. It took me 9 years to get them into court. 9 years! From 2000 to 2009, I finally got to court. And they had me down and whopped up on me when I had a bad shoulder. My ex-wife was sitting in the pickup because I never get out of the car. Never get out of the car unless I'm under arrest. And I got out because my now ex-wife, she couldn't stand the tension, because in 2 years I got 84 traffic citations. They just pounded me unmercifully.
Wow.
And I got out to protect my wife because I didn't want her to do it. And they got me down and they worked me over for a little over a minute. I will never get out of the car. Never, ever get out of a car unless you're under arrest.
Well, what I'm picking up from what all this is pointing at is we've got a shadow government hidden in this administrative act. And ultimately, they do represent somebody who is hiding behind these agencies, and that I don't believe these agencies are within this country, actually, who ultimately is pulling the strings. That's what I interpret what you're saying.
You're absolutely true, because who writes these regulations? We don't know. They could be written in the Vatican. They could be written in London. They could be written in Iraq, Chavez. And we don't know who all these people are. The banksters are involved with all this stuff? Of course they are. How do we know? Because we don't elect the people. We don't see it. These regulations come out. We don't even understand. Did you get up and check the Federal Register this morning to see how many thousands of pages of this junk is being proffered out there? Of course not. Well, this is why, because they're not a whole constitutional republic sits on being accountable. Who in his right mind would put anybody over your life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness that's not accountable to you? You'd be an idiot. And that's what we have.
So we have become, in a sense, Sovietized, in the sense that we are now ruled by bureaucracies which are non-elected. And I agree with Melody's point. I think that is the salient point here. The important point is that the interest being represented in many of these agencies is not for our benefit at all, and we need to trace it back to who those interests really are. But in terms of having each and every official being elected or accountable to us, that would be unwieldy in a government that's in a country as large.
No, it wouldn't be, because the bottom line is you have a sheriff, he's elected, and his deputies are appointed, but they operate on his bond. So that holds him. He holds everybody accountable. He's electable by the people. He has an official bond, which he puts up two bonds. He puts up his house or whatever, his property. He's going to be a constitutional guy.
Yeah, but are you going to elect the park ranger and the fish?
No, you don't have to elect the park ranger because he can be, quote, a mere employee. But we have to have the laws or the things that they work under. We have to have a say-so in it so that we can control it. And the problem is Congress puts out this general nonsense, then all these states by grants or by incorporating, the feds offer all these states. Let's just take a real wild one. This is provable. Child, did you know that in the child custody stuff, they have Congress put out and said, we want so many children adopted out, and we give you $4,000 for the healthy ones and $2,000 for the crippled ones. And do you know that when you go into these child custody hearings, it's called cooperative agreements, that the judicial side, the court, has a contract with the DYFS or whatever you want to call the, quote, executive agencies for performance or money? I have cooperative agreements. I've got them out of Florida. I got them for out of Alaska. It's all an illusion. It's all set up for money. And they have quotas. And the one out of Florida says, oh, by the way, one out of every 20, if you catch us at it, is a throwaway. We can abuse sexually or physically one out of every 20.
Oh, my.
I got the documents.
Well, okay, so we're talking about the corruption that's kind of inherent in the system. We've had other people like Joan Vian on the show who talked about public-private partnerships, which talk about the kind of nexus of corporations, federal agencies, and non-governmental organizations, and that these then become this becomes kind of the fascist template. I guess you're seeing that this is the case.
We have a fascist government, nationalization, and a police state. We have an oligarchy. We have plutocracy. We have a totalitarian. There is no constitutional republic. It's gone. Get over it. Wake up.
Okay, I guess we need to kind of...
Scary thought, really, when you get down to it.
I guess we need to kind of bring this to a close here, and any summations as to what you'd like to finish in your final comments here, Ralph or Eric, go right ahead.
Well, I guess I'd like to finish with a question, Ralph. For someone who's wants to kind of find a reference to get some of these facts that they can look up, do you have a book that you recommend or a website in particular?
I have got a website that's going to be redone. Listen to my show. I have a special list, which I put out documents. It costs $120 donation per year. And the things that I talk about, like on my show in Republic Broadcasting, I put out the documents. I highlight them and say, here it is. Read it yourself.
And the name of your program is?
It's the Ralph Winter Road Show. It's Winter Road, like R-O-A-D, but it's spelled R-O-W-D.
And that's on Sundays?
Sundays at 5 to 7 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Okay, and?
I give out court cases. I give out Federal Register documents so you can go look them up yourself. Because the thing that just irritates the heck out of me is people talk about all this nonsense. They can't back it up. Where's your proof? I put out the proof. Here it is. Here's where they did it. Read it yourself.
Well,
yeah. Well, that's great that you've done that work. And I'm sure... people can learn from that and benefit from it.
Anybody that's listening now, you send an email to Ralph at JustBelly, J-U-S, B as in Bravo, E-L-L-I.com. I will send you a summary out of the Administrative Procedures Act that will scare the living bejesus out of you. Right out of the Congressional Record. Highlighted. Tell me it ain't so.
And you can get on your email list as well, and you update various things that you've researched too, correct?
I have three email lists that are free. I have one Citizens of the United States. I have one for the IRS. I have one just for news if you want to get it. And then I have the special list, which you have to contact me, and it's a donation.
Okay.
And I put out the documents on the special list and say, here's the court cases, here's the Federal Register stuff, because people don't have time to go get this nonsense.
Well, I want to say thank you to both you gentlemen, and another interesting evening. And I want to, Eric?
Oh, I just say thanks as well, Ralph and Melody, and very educational.
Well, thanks for having me on. I hope we didn't scare too many people tonight.
Well, thanks again, Ralph. Good night, Eric.
Good night.
Okay. Yeah, bye.